been all cozy the last 2 days, so don't be shy. See, can everyone see it?
Yes.
Probably easier. Oh, you can see the slides over there, so.
Great.
Okay.
And his most famous character, Astro Boy, and how that kind of established the framework for the whole modern manga and anime industry. We all know here that manga and anime are really big in the United States. For me, what really drove this home was actually The New Yorker, where you would never expect to see something like this. So this is supposed to be a cartoon depicting the average brain of the American teenager. And what amazed me was, of course, they have MySpace and iPod and YouTube and all these things. But lo and behold, here they have manga. The idea being that the average teenager is going to school today, and a part of his brain is occupied by manga. And you'll notice that this isn't like a fanzine. This isn't a magazine about anime or manga. It's a great part removed from that. The New Yorker is a pretty staid magazine. And there's no translation. So manga has really sunk into American culture. In fact, they're in the dictionary, as I mentioned, I think yesterday or something. They're in the Oxford English. It's in the Oxford English Dictionary and also Merriam-Webster. So it's really hit home. This is Otokon several years back. And to tell you the honest truth, I can't remember whether it's 2003 or 1999. Maybe somebody knows. I love this kind of, just the fact that we have conventions now, 25, you know, more thousand people. It's just amazing to me. So this is the quiz. This is a real easy no-brainer. Okay, who's this? What character?
That's good.
Okay, that's getting better. You guys all pass. Who's this?
That's
This isn't from Otakon, actually. This is San Francisco Halloween last year. What cracked me up, of course, is that not only is it very San Francisco kind of pose, he's on the street, but also I think Astro Boy is kind of a slumbering character in the American consciousness. He's always been there, but he's kind of been forgotten by a lot of people, and he doesn't have the prominence of most of the characters that you see in cosplay today. In fact, you won't see very many characters, I think, at any cons in America based on Astro Boy, but that may change soon. So anyway, I show this slide a lot, and people always wonder, you know, why am I showing a slide from 1996? Because this is pretty old. I'm showing it for two reasons. One is to show the reason that, one of the reasons that manga and anime are so popular in North America is simply because they're so huge in Japan. Far larger than, obviously, most Americans outside of our circle can even imagine. In 1996, at the peak of the manga industry, manga books and magazines formed nearly 40% of all published matter, that's excluding newspapers in Japan. And I use a 1996 slide because this is a peak. It's gone down a lot. And actually, manga sales and anime DVD sales in Japan, unfortunately, I have to say, have really dropped. And the readership of manga has dropped as well. But that doesn't mean it's going to go away. It's still a gargantuan social phenomenon. And because it's so big, that's one of the reasons that we have anime available on the scale that we do today, because the industry has saturated the Japanese market and it's moving outside of Japan and trying to develop overseas markets. So why is the manga and anime industry in Japan so big? Well, there's a zillion reasons, and I could talk about those for hours and hours if we don't have. But one of the reasons is because of what manga did in Japan, and that's Osamu Tezuka. At the turn of the millennium, just like in the United States and Japan, there were all kinds of books and retrospectives issued about famous people of the 20th century. And this is a book being advertised by Kodansha, one of the largest publishers in Japan. And what I thought was amazing was that they were listing the famous people. Of course, there's a lot of people we recognize here, like Einstein, JFK, Beatles, Diana, a famous Japanese baseball player. But there's somebody here that most Americans have never heard of yet, and that's full-time with Tesla. That's the status he has in Japan. He's way up there, along with Einstein and JFK, and the most famous people in Japan. And if you know anything about Tesla, you know that he was super productive. And the same publisher that issued that book also has issued his collection. And the collection is not everything he ever created. He actually is said to have drawn 150,000 pages in his life. And a lot of people have a hard time believing that, but I can tell you that he was abnormal in his productivity. The collection that's issued in Japan doesn't have all 150,000 pages he ever drew and wrote, but it consists of 400 volumes, paperback Tonkobon volumes. So if you estimate 200 pages per volume, you're looking at a huge number of pages just there. And the reason I show this, it's an advertisement for the collection. It says, the largest collection in Japan consists of comic books. But you'll notice the outline. What's the outline?
Astro World.
Because that is Tezuka's most famous character, and arguably it may be one of the most famous anime characters and manga characters to come out of Japan ever. This is Tezuka. You've probably seen images of him before. He's always had a beret, glasses. This is kind of his logo, his trademark. This is the first stamp in Japan that I know of that featured a manga artist with his character. And Tezuka created many, many characters, many, many stories, hundreds of characters, and hundreds of stories. But of course, the most famous one was Astro Boy, or Tetsuo Arato. So this is the one they used in Japan for a stamp. And now, of course, you can buy, just like in the U.S., you can buy stamps with Matsumoto Reiji characters, you can buy stamps with all kinds of manga, anime characters. But this was one of the first ones that I knew of. There's another stamp issued by the Japanese government. Again, it shows how much esteem Astro Boy was held in Japan. And you'll notice here that Astro Boy wasn't a human character. He was a robot, and that's an important point to keep in mind when we think about how unique he is as a character, because if you think of American superhero characters, most of them operate on sort of semi-mystical powers. They have superpowers. We're not exactly sure where they came from. There's a lot of kind of mumbo-jumbo in there. Astro Boy was a robot, so all of his powers and his uniqueness came from pseudoscientific principles. They may have been fake, but they sounded real. And they were all based on pseudo-mechanical principles and principles of physics. If you know the Astro Boy story, you'll know that Astro Boy was created as the replacement for the son of the head of the Ministry of Science in Japan. It's kind of a Pinocchio-like story. He was a robot. So this is from the manga, and here's Astro Boy. Oops. Here's Astro Boy, and he says, this is the Department of Precision Machinery in the Ministry of Science. This is where I was born. Tezuka began drawing the story, actually, in 1951, 1952, and a lot of people don't realize this, but in the very beginning, Astro Boy wasn't the central character. He was just one of many characters. But he became so popular among readers that Tezuka turned around with the encouragement of the editors, he made Astro Boy the central character. What I find interesting, and it's kind of funny to reflect on today, is the original title was Atom Taishi. And if you're studying Japanese, or if you are from Japan, you'll know what's interesting about this is that Taishi, the characters here don't mean captain, but Taishi in Japan has the same sound, whether it's captain or ambassador. And in 1951, 1952, people in Japan didn't have as good a knowledge of English as they do today. And I think the editor was probably looking up in a dictionary, asked around, and he got the wrong answer. So they titled it Captain Adam, and in reality, it should have been Ambassador Adam. Sometimes people get the wrong impression that Tezuka created all manga in Japan. That's far from the case. Actually, there were a lot of manga before World War II in Japan. They were very popular. There were manga even during World War II until the paper shortage basically stopped the creation of all kinds of entertainment. Most of the manga, though, had a stage perspective. So it was like looking at a stage from an audience. And you'll notice here, it's kind of orthodox. This is one of the most famous manga from before the war, called Norakuro, or Black Strait, by Tsuhiko Tagawa. This is before Tezuka began drawing, when he would have been a child, and he would have read Norakuro. It was hugely popular among Japanese children. But you notice how static it is in perspective. Now, when Tezuka began drawing, and of course he drew not only Astro Boy, but many other stories, and one of the hallmarks of his stories was the use of many perspectives, what they call in Japan, cinematic techniques, a cinematic perspective. Look at the frontispiece for an early episode of Astro Boy, and compare that with Norakuro. You can really see why Japanese children just went nuts over this when it first appeared, among many.
What is that?
Right.
What is that?
This is a frontispiece from Tetsuan Otomo, or Astro Boy. And I'm going to show you a couple of others.
That was the first anime series?
No, this is the manga series. This was created in the 50s, so this is before the anime. And we'll get to the anime later. This is another one called Mad Machine, also created in the 50s. But look at it. It's almost as though it's jumping off the page if you compare it to this. This is one of the reasons that kids in Japan just love this work. And not only Astro Boy, but other things you can do that too. And unlike other artists, Tezuka really incorporated a lot of sophisticated themes in these stories that were really targeted at young boys. The target age for Astro Boy was probably around 9, 10, 11. But Tezuka started incorporating a lot of sophisticated themes, and when you go back and you read the original stories, you can sort of see that for kids, this would just go right over their heads. But for adults, if you go back and you read the original stories and the things that and see what Tezuka was trying to see, you can see that they were quite profound and quite amazing to be able to do this within the genre of children's comics. That's the kind of thing that's a little intellectual. This is from a story called Blue Knight. And Blue Knight here is asking Astro Boy, because Blue Knight, most robots in the Astro Boy world were programmed to always help humans behave correctly. But every once in a while, there was something wrong with their circuitry. Blue Knight was an example. He was a renegade robot. He tried to organize and revolt against robots. So Blue Knight is trying to encourage Astro Boy to join him and revolt against robots. Humans are lazy and ignorant beasts. Now is the time for us robots to unite and rise up against them. And Astro Boy says, "Are you crazy?" And then Blue Knight says, what I think is an extremely profound question for one robot to ask another robot. He says, "Let me ask you, Astro Boy, are you happy?" This is very kind of symbolic, I think, of the themes that Tezuka was weaving into this story for children. Tezuka was also unique in the sense that he had a strong love of nature. He loved nature from a very early age, and actually when you go back and you read the original Astro Boy stories, you can see that he was way, way ahead of his time in the 1950s. This is from an episode called Red Cap, and I believe it was created in the mid-50s, but it has a real strong ecological theme. It's actually based on a famous novel in Japan, and it is advocating more ecological awareness and protection of the environment and the need to prevent excess development. And if you know what Japan, if you have studied Japanese history, you will remember or you will be aware of what Japan looked like in 1955. A lot of the cities depended on how they built from World War II. It's a very different place than it is today. This is way, way ahead of his time. In America, people weren't using the word ecology yet. Another thing a lot of people are not aware of is that in a lot of Tezuka's comics that are designed for children, there's also a strong political theme. This was filtered out largely in the animation series with which most people are familiar with for a variety of reasons, because the anime always has to target a broader audience. It always has to be filtered. And in a sense, you could say it has to be censored. Tezuka was extremely anti-war. He was almost militant in his opposition to militarism, to use a strange phrase. This is actually from around 1967. It's part of the Astro Boy manga series. Never appeared in the animation. It's called The Angel of Vietnam, and it shows Astro Boy going to Vietnam and protecting the innocent Vietnamese villagers from none other than the United States. and the United States Air Force and B-52 bombers. So here he flies up, because he's a robot, he can fly, of course, he has rockets in his feet, flies up and smashes a hole in the airplane and tells the Americans, the village ahead is filled with good people, and you've got to stop dropping bombs. It's kind of a didactic representation of Astro Boy, but I show it because it gives an example of some of Tezuka's very deeply, deeply held beliefs in the evils of war and the evils of militarism. Here's Tezuka when he was a boy. He was born in 1928 in the town of Takarazuka. He was born in Toyonaka in Osaka, but he grew up in Takarazuka. And some of you probably have been to Takarazuka. Anybody been to Takarazuka here? Okay, then you know that Takarazuka is famous for its all-female performing troupe and theater. If you want to go see, for example, the Rose of Versailles, that's the ideal place to go see it. Tezuka lived and went to school in Takarazuka. His mother was a huge fan of the theater. His father was quite well off. And as a result, Tezuka had a lot of comics at home. He also had like 8mm films, which is really unusual in Japan, given how poor most people were in those days. And he was surrounded by nature, so he grew up with a real strong love of nature, and especially with a love of insects. So here you can see with his butterfly net, he's out insect hunting in Takarazuka. Here he is, he's about to enter middle school. He's about to enter Kitano Chugakko, which is the Kitano Middle School. And I should just tell you that actually a few days ago, I gave this lecture in LA, and what was exciting was that there was a classmate of Tezuka's in the audience. And he's teaching at UCLA, he's in his early 80s, but still doing really well. And he remembered Tezuka very well, and he said that the interesting thing was that although Tezuka had a very scientific bent, he never could have imagined him really becoming a true scientist because he was always drawing manga even as a child. Here's Tezuka in 1945. At this point he's entering medical college in Japan. And this is another thing that distinguishes Tezuka from other artists, and that Tezuka was, he was trained in medicine, and he actually became eventually a licensed physician, although his professor, Tezuka used to joke that his professor had told him that he'd actually done his future patients a big service by not practicing medicine and becoming a manga artist. According to his classmate in L.A., one of the reasons that Tezuka was not drafted at the end of the war was also that he had enrolled in medical college, and that gave him something of an exemption, because the only people who would ever get an exemption in 1945, unless you were terribly physically handicapped in some way, would be that you're studying to be a doctor or you're in a critical scientific field. At this point in Japanese history, most young men who were Tezuka's age were drafted and they were sent to the front lines. And even if you were not drafted, you were mobilized to work in factories. And Tezuka, in 1945, was not exempt from this. He had to work in a factory. He was mobilized. Everyone was working for the war effort in 1945, some way or another. But World War II played a huge role in the development of Tezuka's worldview. He was actually drawing comics as a very young boy, long before he was ever published. He was a fanatic fan of comics, Japanese comics. And he started drawing comics in a new way. He started decompressing storylines. He took what was essentially the American comic strip format, which was popular in Japan, and he began expanding it and creating more and more pages to tell stories and using more and more cinematic techniques and imitating a lot of people. And you can see in this story, which he created, which is called Shōri no Himare, Until the Day of Victory. He was a boy, so he was indoctrinated by the Japanese system. And in this story, he's basically used a famous comic character, a comic strip character in Japan at the time called Fuku-chan, or Little Fuku. And it's a dream sequence. This is actually a very long story. But the American bombers at this point had obliterated the Japanese Air Force. There was no way for Japan to effectively strike back. But Tenzin, in this sequence, he imagines that Fukuchan pilots a Japanese bomber and is able to hit back at New York. Because the cities in Japan earlier in the story had just been bombed by American bombers piloted by Mickey Mouse. Tezuka, in this sequence, Tezuka draws Mickey Mouse, he draws Fukuchan, and of course he wasn't publishing it, so he didn't have to worry about copyright issues. But the gag here is that it's a dream sequence, and it reads like this. And they bomb New York, and then Fukuchan says, "Banzai, banzai, we did it." And then his father comes into the room and he says, "Hey, this is not the time to yell banzai. We're actually in the middle of an air raid. It's time to evacuate and go to a bomb shelter because the American bombers were coming." So Tezuka, as a young man, experienced the bombing of Osaka. And this created an indelible memory in him. And it's probably one of the reasons, or not probably, it is the reason that he was so opposed to militarism and war in all ways. Later on, he would create a series called Kaigo Furide, or Fortress of Paper, which is based on his own personal experience. When he was mobilized to work in a factory, a lot of Americans, they only are aware of Hiroshima and Nagasaki where the A-bomb was dropped. But actually, an equivalent amount of damage was inflicted in Tokyo and other major Japanese cities in the firebombings, which took place in the spring and summer of 1945. After 100,000 people were killed in Tokyo in a three-day period, American bombers started going south, and they began bombing places like Nagoya, Kobe, and Osaka, where Tezuka was working. They bombed his factory, and he just barely escaped with his life, and he was able to flee. And on the way home, he came to this river, which was filled with people who were dying and trying to escape from the fires. And this is what he depicted in this series. So this is a big theme of all of his manga, this anti-war sentiment. Whether he's creating adult, or whether he's creating Astro Boy stories, or whether he's creating animation. As I mentioned, he was a physician. And that is a theme of all of his stories. Interest in science, an interest in the physical world around him, an intense curiosity about the world and the way it works. And that distinguished him, again, from other manga artists. And it's reflected in the Astro Boy story, because as I mentioned, Astro Boy was a robot based on pseudoscientific principles. So he had rockets in his feet, he had a machine gun in his tail, which was largely censored out in the US animation. He had a computer, not in his head, which is interesting, because remember, he was created in 1951, 52. He had a computer in his body. So sometimes he could take off his head. The head didn't really do much. It was largely decorative. He had rockets in his hands, searchlights in his eyes, and special ears. But it was all based on mechanical principles, which again makes it a very unique character. And it's one of the reasons that Astro Boy as a character in Japan has always become sort of a metaphor for science and scientific learning. And it's often been used, to encourage people to learn more about science. This is a magazine that came out. It had a short manga episode in it. But this was to teach kids about science and specifically about robots. So it's titled Robotics or Robot, the Science of Robots. And here's Astro Boy, and this magazine came out in the beginning of the 60s. You can see the size of the computer in the room. Your iPhone probably has about 100 times more computing power than this thing did. But it illustrates how Astro Boy was used to promote science and interest in science in Japan. If you go to Japan today, you'll see a lot of news about personal robots and humanoid robots, and in particular bipedal robots. And some of you may have seen this Asimo was actually at the Smithsonian 2 years ago, the JFK Center, right?
Yeah, well, JFK did a Japanese culture.
Yeah, I was there, and they had Asimo, a later iteration of this, which was much more advanced than this photo. This is from 2003. But if you ever have a chance to see it, it's quite remarkable, and now he can run as well as go up and down stairs.
He can play soccer.
I mean, quite.
And play soccer, remember?
Yeah, and most people have no idea how difficult it is to get a robot to run or to walk, because walking is actually a controlled falling. And the reason I show this is that Japan is the only nation in the world which is seriously pursuing this kind of research. In the United States and in Europe, this is regarded as ridiculous. We do not pursue this kind of bipedal humanoid research in the United States seriously. You cannot get funding for it. Only in Japan. One of the reasons, if you talk to a lot of the scientists, is that they'll say they were influenced by Astro Boy. They want to create something like Astro Boy. And actually, if you talk to a lot of the younger scientists today, unfortunately, they'll say they also want to create something like Gundam. Another hallmark of Tezuka and of the Astro Boy stories is the fact that Tezuka, as I mentioned earlier, was heavily influenced by the theater, by Takarazuka. Not only did he go to the theater as a young boy and absorb a lot of the stage designs and a lot of the aesthetics of these plays that were performed and musicals that were performed by women or a female audience in Takarazuka, but he also began acting when he was a young man. In the Osaka area, he was briefly in a theater group. And here he is, the far left. He's playing the painter in Dostoevsky's Crime and Punishment. And actually, he incorporated some of these stage designs when he created a manga version of Crime and Punishment later. Again, it shows, I think, how remarkable Tezuka was, because the idea of creating a manga version of a story like Crime and Punishment, which involves a horrible murder, for what at the time, in 1953 or so, was an audience of young children of 9, 10, 11 years old, it's hard to wrap your mind around. But that's the kind of person Tezuka was. Because he was influenced by the theater, he also used what is called the star system. And maybe there'll be a book about that later. But the star system is very rare among comic artists, right? Very few people use this. There are others who have employed it in Japan, but it's very rare. And Tezuka later started to de-emphasize it. But when he was creating Astro Boy in the beginning of the 50s, he used it very effectively. And the star system consisted of a list of the characters he had created that he used for many different roles in many different stories. So it was just like a film star. Just like you might have Harrison Ford in The Fugitive in one film, but also play Han Solo in Star Wars. We accept that. In comics, that's quite rare. Tezuka was somebody, though, who employed it very effectively. So some of these characters, like Yoyoji or Mustachio, and the detectives, the police here, these are recycled characters in other stories. Also, Otami Mizu Hakase or Professor Otami Mizu. So in the Astro Boy story, Tezuka used these characters in specific roles. And what's particularly interesting about the Astro Boy story, because it was about a robot, and the robot had to live in a human world, is that human characters had to coexist with robot characters. And a lot of people are not aware, but when Tezuka created Astro Boy, the manga and the story, originally in 1951-52, he set it in our world. Not in 1951-52, but in 2003. And in the storyline, Astro Boy was actually born April 7, 2003. So he lived in our world. And it's fascinating to go back and read the original stories, because you can see how someone in 1951-52 imagined what our world would look like. So since Astro Boy it's not shown here, but he lived in a world of humans, this is his creator, the head of the Ministry of Science, Dr. Tenma. This is his foster father, you might say, who gave him a real mother and father who are robots, because he felt sorry for him, because Astro Boy was kind of an orphan in a way. This is his school teacher, who's human, planes are human, police are human. But Otami Mizu created a robot brother for Astro Boy, and also later on, also a sister. So we live in this world, which is kind of like our world, except we don't have humanoid robots, but we're surrounded by robots today, even though we don't realize it. Every time you go get cash from an ATM, every time you're using a computer, you're interfacing
with a type of AI, you're interfacing with a type of robot. So the world that Tezuka envisioned was different from what we live in, but similar in many ways too. Another thing that distinguished Tezuka and when he created Astro Boy was that Tezuka was a huge fan of American animation, in particular Walt Disney and Max Fleischer and other animators. He was such a fan of Walt Disney that he also created a manga version of, not the original classic Japanese story, but the Disney Pinocchio version, and also Bambi, the Disney version of Bambi. And you can see he was able to emulate a Disney style very effectively. If this were today, he probably would have been sued by Walt Disney. he was such a fan of Walt Disney that in 1964 he went to the New York World's Fair and he actually met Walt Disney. He was working as a cartoonist and reporting back to the newspaper in Japan, so he drew himself here. He always drew himself with the beret and the glasses. Here's Walt. This is the Pepsi Cola Pavilion. Pepsi from New York, Walt Disney. And Tezuka is amazed here because Walt Disney's standing around with his characters, and he writes, they were treating Mr. Disney just like royalty. And actually, Tezuka was a very competitive person, in a way kind of a jealous person, and he would have loved to have become like Walt Disney in terms of eventually having them share Disneyland and that sort of thing as well. But he idolized Walt Disney. Before Tezuka created animation, there was a live-action version of Astro Boy created for Japanese TV. It was extremely clunky.
Really?
So that is a poor image. It's very hard to get a good image of this. They dressed up some kid and put a little orange on
it. I need to find it.
But it was always Tezuka's dream to create animation because he was a fan of American animation.
Really?
And there was animation in Japan before Tezuka appeared. There was a lot of animation, but it was almost all theatrical animation. And no one in Japan had created a weekly animated TV series. Nobody thought that it was financially possible with those time constraints. The animation that was shown on Japanese TV in those days was from the United States. There were shows in Japan that were very popular. There were recycled shorts, Tom and Jerry, Mickey Mouse, that kind of thing, as well as stuff from Hanna-Barbera, the Flintstones, and the Jetsons, that sort of thing. But Tezuka wanted very much to create anime, and he sold so many manga books, especially of Astro Boy and other popular stories, that he got enough money together where he could start to finance this. Because as you know, anime takes a lot of people, a lot of money. It's a totally different process than creating manga. And he formed a company in the beginning of the 60s. Here he is with his beret and his glasses. This is Mushiro, which eventually flamed out in bankruptcy. But Mushiro created Japan's first animated TV series, 30-minute animated TV series. And the work that Tezuka decided to animate, of course, was none other than Astro Boy, because it was hugely popular as a character. This was a real no-brainer. You wanted to recoup some of your investment, and you wanted to use one of Tezuka's characters. The answer was clear. It had to be Astro Boy. So the result was Tetsuo Atom, as you know in Japan, a mighty Atom, iron-armed Atom, January 1st, 1963, and it was hugely popular, not just because it was a cool show, and an interesting character, and an interesting storyline, but because it was Japan's first 30-minute animated TV series, and there was a lot of national pride involved. And if you go back and read the newspapers, it's fascinating because the articles are talking about not only how interesting it is and entertaining, but if you look at the business page, they're talking about this is a new way for Japan to earn foreign capital. And it kind of is reminiscent of the way the Japanese government is talking now, 40 or more years later, because they're starting to view anime and manga as a way to earn more foreign capital overseas. I really wanted to use this photo in my book that I created a few years ago on Astro Boy. Some people probably recognize this character, but not a character. Do you know who this is?
Prince.
Actually, no. Another answer?
Just the little boy staring at a doll?
This is the little boy staring at Astro Boy doll, but does anybody know who this lady is?
Oh, the lady.
The Empress of Mine?
That's correct. That's the Empress of Japan. This is the current Crown Prince. In 1965. I really wanted to use this photo, and I wrote a letter to Japan, and I wrote a letter to the magazine that it originally appeared in. I said, I'd really love to use this photo. It's just fabulous. Can I please, 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 please use this in my book? And I got the answer in Japanese, of course, which loosely translated it into English is, are you kidding? But it shows how Astro Boy quickly became a national icon. And he remains a national icon in Japan. And the result was that there were some people from the United States who saw the show in Japan, and they contacted NBC Enterprises in the United States. And NBC Enterprises created or localized Tetsuo or Mighty Adam for the U.S. market. And a lot of people think that it was shown in the U.S., actually on network TV, but it wasn't. It was syndicated. It only appeared in select stations around the U.S. But it got very good ratings where it did appear, and it was very popular. So Tetsuo came here, and he signed a deal with the head of NBC Enterprises. And again, it was huge news in Japan, and it contributed to the popularity of Astro Boy and to the image of Astro Boy being this national icon, national character. And some people wonder why the name was changed. Fred Ladd is the person who was responsible for producing the American version. I think he did a very good job. There's a lot of different theories floating around. Actually, in Japan, there's this theory in a lot of books that Tezuka actually wrote in one of his articles, he said that Atom in America apparently means to fart, so they had to change it to Astro. Somebody was feeding him the wrong information. But to my surprise, I discovered recently that actually there was a comic book in the United States around the same time called Mighty Atom, which would have been a logical translation. There are other reasons as well. Fred Ladd talks about discussing with the people at NBC Enterprises, and they eventually came up with Astro Boy. I think in retrospect that Astro Boy was a good name because it helped delete the atomic power nuances from the character which existed in Japan and would have become more problematic when an anti-nuclear movement began to get stronger here. Astro Boy was created right after the war in Japan, when people had a lot of hopes that nuclear power could be used for peaceful purposes. So using atomic power in a character, because Astro Boy had a nuclear engine in him, he had an atomic engine in it, he was powered by nuclear power, was a manifestation of this desire for a world of peace in Japan. So I think the title that they eventually selected for the U.S. was good. And in the same year as it showed in Japan, actually, in the United States in 1963, it showed under the title of Astro Boy. So there you have, Tezuka had created, with the manga version and the anime version of Astro Boy, he kind of created a framework for the modern industry. And he showed how manga artists could create a character on their own, a manga character, serialize it in a magazine. It could be compiled into paperback books. It could become enormously popular. And then you could create an animated series. And then that animated series, as we know today, is often turned into all kinds of other subsidiary and ancillary things like operas and pencils and notebooks and bicycles and musicals and CDs and DVDs and even novels and stuff like that. So Tezuka really created a framework for this huge industry that exists in Japan today and which supports us. It feeds our habits. Tezuka was unique in the sense that he was also one of the first Japanese artists to reach overseas and progressively reach out to other artists. Here he is, he's visiting Ward Kimball, who's one of the most famous animators from Disney. He's passed away, but he's one of the grand old men of the Disney animator team. This is me in another incarnation. Ward Kimball was a huge fan of model trains, so we went out to his home and he showed us all his model trains. He helped create Alice in Wonderland, and I think he originated the Jimmy the Cricket character. He's a very famous animator. So Tezuka was very active in reaching out to other artists and to other people in the industry in the United States and also Europe and around the world.
He was unique in that sense. He became the official ambassador, you might say, of the Japanese industry overseas. And he is also the first artist who really started to actively establish connections with fans in the United States. And you can see the genesis of the entire fan movement in the United States with a slide like this. This is from around 1980, I believe. I can tell you the honest truth, I can't remember whether it was 80 or 81. This is from the CFO group in LA. Any people remember CFO or aware of it? Okay. This is Fred Patton, one of the original CFO people, Robin Leiden. In LA, there were people who were collecting 8mm, 6mm films and showing them among each other of Japanese animation. They were huge fans of animation. And they would have meetings and they had a big club. And it was really the beginning of the whole fan movement, animation, anime fan movement in the United States. And Tezuka came to LA and he would reach out to these groups and visit them. So here he is with his entourage. This is another animator, Suzuki Shinichi, who's a famous animator in Japan. He's a movie critic, a good friend of mine, Kosei Ono. This is me in another incarnation. This is my friend Jared Cook, who also would interpret for Tezuka when Tezuka would come to the United States. And then you'll notice, here's an American fan, and he's wearing a beret, just like Tezuka, because Tezuka always wears beret in his glasses. It was part of his established character. And of course, he's doing something that no Japanese fan ever would have dared do, which is he's got his arm around Tezuka. and of course, in Japan, Tezuka created manga characters far beyond Astro Boy, and he created anime, many, many works of anime, theatrical features, TV animation. He has many other famous works, many of which you're familiar with, for children, for girls, for boys, for adults. We have an opportunity in the States to read many of them. But Astro Boy remains his most famous character of all. Here he is in 1980 in Kobe. It's a big event. You see an audience of hundreds, and he's drawing his most famous character, Astro Boy, with his giant brush. He did all kinds of events like this. And it's amazing, given how productive he was, that he was able to fit this into his time. So like I said in the beginning, he was abnormally productive. He wasn't normal at all in the way he was able to use his time. He died in 1989. If you have a chance, if you go to Japan, if you go to Takarazuka, definitely visit the Osamu Tezuka Memorial Museum. Some of you probably have already been there. I know that you've probably been there. Anyone else been to the museum at Takarazuka? It's a great way to see how remarkable a person Tezuka was. It's a nice, cozy little museum. And the walkway that leads into it, in imitation of Grumman's Chinese Theater in L.A., has these handprints, footprints. And of course, little kids like to come up and, you know, see if they fit with Astro Boy's handprints and footprints. Astro Boy is also one of the more heavily licensed characters in Japan because it is a national icon. It's a way for Tezuka's company, which survives, and his family to continue to have income based on his characters. He advertises securities. He also advertises home security systems. He also advertises, these are massage chairs. This is by the family company. It's called the Medical Chair for a Medical Chair for an Area.
So shoot the robber in the head and then give you the back rub.
If you go to Tezuka Productions, which is Tezuka's surviving company, you'll see that not only is their logo, it uses Tezuka's most popular character, which is none other than Astro Boy, but it has a stone statue of Astro Boy in the front. As I mentioned, there are many other characters and stories that Tezuka created, and you can see them being made into theatrical features in Japan today. A couple years ago, it was Dororo, which you can read in English, now in manga form, from Vertigo. This year, it's already been released, or it's about to be released, but MW or MU. It's out? Okay.
So good.
It's good? All right, good. So every couple of years now, they're bringing out feature films or new animated works based on Tezuka's original manga stories. If you want to read the original Astro Boy stories, which I recommend highly, You can read them from Dark Horse in English. I translated all of these. There's 23 volumes total, many thousands of pages, a lot of work, a lot of fun. I was absolutely amazed when I translated these to go back and to see with an adult eye how sophisticated the stories and the messages that he had in these various Astro Boy episodes. Astro Boy's been translated into many languages. It was one of the first Japanese comics to be widely translated, appearing in China very early. It's also appeared in French, Chinese here. You'll notice the format's different, left to right in France, right to left in China. And one thing that's really exciting and dear to my heart is this adaptation of Astro Boy, which is now being published in Japan and also in the United States in translation. And I'm involved in translating it with my friend Jared Cook. It's called Pluto. It's based on one episode of Tezuka's original Astro Boy manga series called The Greatest Robot on Earth. If you have a chance, I think this is one of the best manga that's been created in Japan in many years. It's a retelling of the Astro Boy story and one episode of it for adults, and a retelling of what was a short episode in 8 Kankobon, or about 1,600 or more pages. Or maybe 2,000 pages. Great story. And as you probably know, there's an Astro Boy film, feature film. It's on track. I'm pleased to report it looks as though it's solid. They went through some rough periods. I just got an email a few days ago from Fred Ladd in LA, who was the producer of the original American localized Astro Boy. And he visited the Imagine Studios and he said it looks like it's done. It's CGI, all CGI. October 23rd is the release date, and it'll be distributed here by Summit. So it's something to look forward to. You'll see previews in the movie theaters starting very soon if they're not showing already. There's only one bronze statue I know of Astro Boy in Japan, and that's this one in the Tokyo area. It's not particularly well done. I don't really like it. I don't think it looks like Tezuka's Astro Boy. But it's kind of cool, and if you look at the slogan at the bottom, I really like it because I think it expresses what Tezuka tried to symbolize when he created Astro Boy and created the story. And in Japanese it says, Shoto shito, shoto shizen, shoto kikai na itsu made mo naka no yui tomodachi de arimasu youni. We pray that humans will always be good friends with other humans, with nature, and with machines. It's a very Tezuka theme and a very Japanese, almost animistic kind of theme. And you'll notice at the bottom of the statue that somebody had put a 5 yen coin. Some of you may know 5 yen in Japanese is pronounced goen. And goen is a pun. It can mean 5 yen, or it can also mean, in Chinese, it's yuan, which is connections, good luck, good connections. So people put coins sometimes as an expression of good luck on objects like this. Tezuka is buried in a Zen temple in the Tokyo area. Very few people go to this. It's not what you would think. It's not a huge, elaborate place at all. It's a Soto-sect Zen temple in the Tokyo area. This is his family plot. And you'll notice this tiny placard over here. And you'll see it has Tezuka's most famous characters. Phoenix, Princess Knight, here's Professor Ochanomizu, Mustachio, Blackjack, Kimba. And what's the largest one of all is Astro Boy. And finally, you'll see Tezuka's name down here, and this is his actual signature. And if you know anything about Tezuka, you probably already know this, but one of the fun things about him is that his pen name is a little different than his legal name. This is Tezuka, and this is the Osamu part. And this last character, he added on, and it's the character for insect, because he loved to collect insects as a boy. And it's a pun on Osamu and Mushi means insect in Japanese. And to just drive the pun home, he always draws two little dots to make it look like an insect. So that's his actual signature in his autograph. And that's all I had prepared in terms of visuals. And maybe, how much time do we have? Maybe we're out of time, or we have time for a question? What time is it?
About 5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay. Great. Well, we've ended on time. If anyone wants to know more about Astro Boy, you can learn more than you would ever like to know, probably, in this book here. And also, my website is here. Feel free to access it. There's a lot of information on the other stuff I do as well. The fact that maybe one question? I know you want to.
I'm really sick. I was wondering if you could verify, did Walt Disney really rip Simba off of Pimp of the White Lion?
Really good question. It depends on how you define rip off. In the animation business and in the manga and also the comic business, people are always borrowing each other's ideas. And when I saw The Lion King, of course that was my first thought that Walt Disney is truly a rip-off Fezbear and Kimba the White. And there are certain scenes in The Lion King that I think are undeniably lifted from Kimba the White Lion. I think the real problem is that Disney did not acknowledge that they knew, that their staff knew of Pezuka, that they knew of Kimba the White Lion. They did not acknowledge that there was somebody in Pezuka out there and that there was this pre-existing work. They had just acknowledged it, there would never have been a problem. But it became a huge issue in Japan. As many of you know, there was a group of 400 artists, editors, and whatnot, who actually sent a letter of protest to Buena Vista, which is the distribution arm of Walt Disney in Japan, protesting. They did not sue. The Tezuka family did not sue Walt Disney. I think there are a variety of reasons, one of which is the fact that Tezuka was a huge admirer of Walt Disney. And also, I think we have to be honest and we have to realize that artists tend to live from each other. They tend to be influenced by each other. If Tezuka had been alive, he probably would have laughed at what he saw. And in a secret way, he would have been proud. He probably would have thought that he'd been ripped off, but he probably wouldn't have accused Disney of ripping him off. It's a very subtle psychology at work there. And also, we have to remember that when Tezuka was young, of course, he also was emulating Walt Disney in many of his drawings. So I think there was a little
bit of emulation.
I personally was horrified by what Walt Disney did, and I was quoted in a lot of newspapers when they wrote articles on this issue. I think it's preposterous, the idea that, you know, that people who were involved in the production of The Lion King, they came out and officially stated in the newspaper that none of the staff knew anything about Gonzalo Tezuka and they'd never heard of The White Lion. I just thought that was, that was such a, you know, they were probably biased to say it was my age.
I feel we're today.
No.
A bunch of kids, probably.
Quick question.
No,
in the 50s, if they did not, the 50s, did Tezuka talk a lot about the potential of manga as a literary form? And one of the reasons I ask that is because, as you know, in the United States, in the 50s, comic books get pegged as being kids' material. And that stigma kind of stayed with people. And when I'm reading books like The Autobiography of a Drifting Life, it's interesting how that stigma doesn't seem to have attached itself to manga and its community in Japan.
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, there was a stigma against manga, anime, and animation in Japan, and there still is to a certain extent, but it pales in comparison to the United States. Tezuka, obviously, in the 40s was a very young man. And in the 50s, he started working as, you know, actively, as he really got going as a professional. But it is interesting to note that when he created one of his very early works, before it was published, it was one of his long works. He was just a school boy. He was still in high school. As I said, it was never published, but it was one of these sort of experimental things where he was decompressing American format using dozens, hundreds of pages. In one of the prefaces, he says, this is neither a novel nor a manga. So he obviously, as a boy, was dreaming of doing something beyond standard comic book, and something that's not a novel either, something in between. But in the 1940s, not to be able to articulate that venue to do that for the meeting. So there's very little written at that time. But later on, when you get into the 60s, then he starts to like to cook. But very early, he has this phrase, it's written, says, whatever, neither novel nor novel.
Do you know if there's any plans to recreate or re-release any of his other anime productions, like Wonder 3 or anything like that? Because it seems like they've been redoing a lot of ones, I guess, to hold on to the licenses and whatnot recently.
You mean like the theatrical feature or something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's hard to say. Obviously, for an international market, Astro Boy's a no-brainer. I know that the company, yeah, of course, is open to all kinds of adaptations, especially if they're in live action or animation. They're quite strict about anybody fiddling with the original manga or the original work itself, but they're very open to adaptations. And that's one of the reasons we're seeing live action films coming out in Japan at a fairly regular pace now, based on those works, and also animation and so forth and so on. So who knows? I think it's just all about the market and whether it's enough demand.
I could see in the translation of Hito no Tori recently, it's like a real big surprise. Well, Phoenix, as we know it.
You mean the animated version?
The animated version of it, yeah.
Yeah. I would love to see a theatrical feature based on part of the Phoenix. That would be great, too. Who knows? Who knows what we'll see? All sorts of things can be possible, and I guess we're out of time. So.